You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey, y'all. Uncle Jimmy here. When you speak for yourself, you're forced to think for yourself. And when you think for yourself, the sports world looks different. In order to enjoy this podcast and this show, you need to have the courage to look at the world from alternative points of view and not be offended when you disagree. Speak for yourself isn't your Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram feed. SFY tells you what you need to hear and not what you want to hear. So, welcome aboard, buckle up, and enjoy the ride.
We start today in New Orleans. All right, according to Pro Football Reference, Drew Brees trails only Peyton Manning in all-time fourth-quarter game-winning drives. Last night in New Orleans, Brees moved one step closer to catching Manning in game-winning drives and quite possibly overall respect as an NFL quarterback. Trailing by a point with 37 seconds to play and just one timeout, Brees zipped the Saints 35 yards downfield, setting up a game-winning field goal that broke the hearts of Houston and the minds of everyone watching at home. You can't leave Drew Brees a half a minute. As soon as Deshaun Watson completed his brilliant go-ahead drive, I immediately thought the Texans left Brees too much time. Life has a handful of fluctuating, unwritten rules. Years ago in Kansas City, everyone knew, unless you enjoyed second place, don't chase the same woman as Tony Gonzalez.
Oh, wow.
Don't leave unfinished Chick-fil-A within arm's length of me.
That's true.
And you damn sure don't leave Drew Brees 30 seconds in a one-score game. It's not going to end well. Drew Brees has surpassed Dan Marino and John Elway as the most clutch quarterback in league history, at least in terms of perception. If Brees can win another Super Bowl, that reputation as clutch might eventually put him in the conversation as a better QB than Manning. Ooh. Right now, the quarterback Mount Rushmore is Tom Brady, Joe Montana, Johnny Unitas, and Peyton Manning. That's not my personal Mount Rushmore. Elway is on my Mount Rushmore. But if you would aggregate everyone's top four, I believe Brady, Montana, Unitas, and Manning would finish on top. Manning is number four and the most vulnerable. His postseason struggles put him behind the big three. His five MVP trophies place him well ahead of Brees, who has never been selected MVP. However, we live in the era when narrative trumps facts. You can build a narrative that argues Brees is better than Manning. Drew Brees is David in the Goliath of sport. The undersized quarterback who slayed the Giants of football for two decades is an amazing story. Brees is going to finish his career with more passing yards and touchdowns than Manning. Brees has a chance of catching Manning in total wins. What's going to take the Manning-Brees debate, make it fascinating, is when people ask, if you had to win one game, who would you rather have, Drew Brees or Peyton Manning? Brees' reputation is that he's clutch. Manning's reputation is that he's not. That seems strange given Manning leads the NFL in game-winning drives. Again, narrative trumps facts. Brees' narrative might someday surpass Peyton Manning's. All right, joining the desk now are Fox College football analyst Reggie Bush and the newest member to the NFL Hall of Fame, Tony Gonzalez. Welcome back
to
the show.
That's a beautiful thing.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
It's awesome.
Appreciate
it. All right, we'll Absolutely. Get to that a little bit later in the show. But, LeVar, I'm going to start with you. Could Drew Brees surpass Manning if he wins another Super Bowl?
Not if he wins another Super Bowl. I liked your Eminem approach, the 8 Mile approach, by putting out there, these are the reasons why we look at Peyton Manning as being the guy, the amount of MVPs. They matter, the statistical category and wins. They matter. But when you look at Drew Brees and what he's been able to do, people love Drew Brees. They love the story. He's undersized. He's been able to create a whole lot of success for himself. But I think he has to win more Super Bowls than Peyton Manning, just based off of the amount of MVPs. You have to have clutch involved with you if you're going to get five MVPs. One is amazing.
Yeah.
Two is pretty interesting. Anything beyond that, that has GOAT written all on it. And I think Peyton Manning has been everything that goes into being the best in the game. I think he has to get three Super Bowls if he's going.
Three?
I think so.
Well, we would have had one last year. Aaron Robbins. Right? Okay, you know what I'm saying?
That's fair. That's fair. We don't know if he wins it, but that's fair.
Right.
But if he ties Peyton Manning,
yeah,
I still don't think there's enough MVPs there for you to say he's more of a player than what Peyton Manning was.
But I think what Drew has done is he's already surpassed him as an all-time passing leader, right?
Yards.
In yards. He's thrown for 5,000 yards five different times. All the other quarterbacks have done that, they've only done it one time. Drew's the only one has done it multiple times. So I think if he gets another Super Bowl, which could possibly be this year, maybe next year, if he can get one more Super Bowl and you factor in that he's already passed Peyton on the all-time passing yards leader list, I think he can pass him, because last night what we saw was typical Drew Brees doing business, doing surgery on defenses and coverages that he's done time after time. Now, he doesn't have as many fourth quarter comeback wins yet, but he will get there if he plays long enough. So I do think he can. I do think he can pass him.
He's the only quarterback I legitimately, like 37 seconds, I immediately said, they're winning this game.
But I mean, you could say that for Peyton Manning if you put him in that same position, or a lot of quarterbacks. You take Tom Brady, and that's what makes you in this conversation. Yeah. That's why we've been talking about it. But if I had to pick, because that's why we're sitting here, because in the hallway they asked me about this question, I'm like, I don't care, I'll take both of them. But if I had to pick, I'm still going to stick with Peyton, just because of what he did for the position, how he revolutionized the position. When he come to the line of scrimmage, he was calling all that stuff, the Omaha this, and now a lot of quarterbacks do this type of thing when they get to the line. So he was kind of the front runner, the guy who changed the position, changed the way the quarterback position was played. But having said that, I will go back, and I've talked about this before. You always do this type of stuff. Hot dogs or hamburgers?
Uh-oh.
Ferrari or Lamborghini?
Ketchup or mustard?
Okay, Beyonce or Whitney Houston? It's like, Michael Jordan or LeBron. Which one do you want? I'll take them both. I'll take them all at the same time.
I want to say this, though, Tony, about, and I hate this, because people for years have think I beat up on Peyton Manning. I love Peyton Manning. I'm from Indianapolis. I saw what he did to the entire state in terms of football. However, again, when it comes to being clutch in the postseason, there are questions about Peyton Manning.
I can attest to one of those games we beat him in the Super Bowls. Yeah. One of those games where he did not come up with the clutch win.
There are questions about him, and I think that hovers over him a bit. And look, I get all the MVPs, and he certainly deserved them. And right now, Drew Brees isn't in that category. But people love stories. This little quarterback, man, dominating this league for 20 years, I just think people...
Can we enter the Jason Whitlock's People's Court?
Yes.
Can I introduce some new evidence to the courtroom,
ahead.
Please?
Oh, nice.
This is good, because I know you're a fan of Drew. All right, I get this.
I'm a fan of Peyton, too.
I understand that. But that little statistic right there, Drew Brees in 2012 and 16, right?
Mm-hmm.
Out of those five seasons, he missed the playoffs, not the Super Bowl. He missed the playoffs 4 out of 5 times. If we're going to introduce that evidence into Mr. Whitlock's official court of public opinion, if I look at Mr. Peyton Manning, how many times did he miss
those
playoffs?
Is that coming off the devastation of what happened? Didn't Sean Payton get suspended for a year?
Yeah. Four
bounty
playoffs.
Gate. That's coming
in
off
5 years.
Okay.
Peyton Manning never went back-to-back seasons without going to the playoffs in a 17-year career.
Okay, but that last Super Bowl Peyton Manning got, the last Super Bowl, who won that game? Let's keep it real. Who won that game?
Peyton Manning was the quarterback.
He was on the team, yeah. But the defense won the game.
You can say that about Elijah, too, in New York both times.
We do say that about him.
But he got MVP both times.
Okay, you're right. Defense is what kept him in there to get that Super Bowl.
All right, let me ask this question coming off what Drew Brees did last night. If you only had one game to play, not an entire season, one game to play, who would you want at quarterback, Drew Brees or Peyton
Manning? I'm taking the half man, half machine, man. I'm telling you, if you could hear probably what Peyton Manning's brain does when he's on the football field, it'd probably be like something like this. There's the robber over there. The safety's right there. All right, the linebacker's moving over there. The linebacker came up. All right, the defensive end went upfield. All right, there he is right there. Throw it right now. But done. I want the machine.
The machine, that seems to have problems in the biggest games,
yep.
Going all the way back to college, that's when the machine seems to malfunction.
When you have the camera on you as much as Peyton Manning has had it on you, you're going to see moments in time where he may not exactly be exactly what everybody exactly wants him to exactly be. And there's a guy by the name of Tom Brady that is the GOAT of GOATs as well. And you know what? You could say he's had the same situations take place in his career. He has lost in the big game. It's how you bounce back. It's what your body of work is. It's how you do what you do when you're doing what you're doing when you're doing it like when you're doing it on TV. Right. And Peyton Manning has always done that. He has always done
that. One game.
I got to go with Drew Brees because I know his DNA. I know his character. I've been in the huddles with him. I know how he commands respect on the field, not just from the offense, but also from that defense on the other side of the football field. Much like we saw last night in the Monday Night Football game, like you said, they left them too much time on the clock. And then what was the defensive coordinator doing? Playing prevent defense.
We're gonna get to that. Yeah.
They only need 7 yards. You in prevent defense, bro? They got one. They got one timeout.
And you're facing Drew Brees. One
and
game.
And you're facing Drew Brees.
And you're facing Drew Brees. You know, one game in the Super Bowl or during the regular season. Because in the Super Bowl, I don't know. Peyton was an MVP of the Super Bowl before, but it's not even in that game he didn't light it up. Right?
No, he did not.
I don't know. That's a tough one.
Drew and Peyton went head to head, and Drew won.
Yeah, there was that one game.
In the Super Bowl.
In the Super Bowl.
And Drew got the MVP.
And Peyton threw a pick six, didn't he?
I think he got the MVP. Yeah.
I hate this question. Because they're so good.
You know what the right answer is, though. You do know what the right answer is.
Because I have to pick. It's like one of those things. I'd rather flip a coin, but I'm going to.
You ain't going wrong with either one of them.
You know the right answer.
You ain't going wrong with either one.
I don't know how to get that answer. I don't know how to get that answer.
The right answer is Peyton Manning. Drew Brees is a great story, great player, Big Ten guy. I'm a fan of him. But we know outside.
I'm going to give you one last thing to think about, then we're going to go.
All right.
I'm going to give you this has always been my knock on Peyton Manning. And it's the same as LeBron James. Sometimes you have too much talent and you think you're smarter than the coaches.
Mm.
And if you look at Tom Brady and his partnership with Bill Belichick, you look at Drew Brees and his partnership with Sean Payton, it's a knock on Peyton Manning that he never had that partnership long-term with one coach.
Yeah.
And that's what he wanted control. He maybe he is smarter than the coaches. Mm-hmm. Maybe Tom Brady's smarter than Bill Belichick.
Drew Brees didn't have that.
Maybe Drew what?
Drew Brees didn't have that.
What do you mean? He's got Sean Payton.
He had to leave. He was somewhere else before.
That's because of his shoulder.
He had to leave
because of injury.
He didn't build down San Diego.
Who bounced back better from the injury?
Come on. That's two different that's two different points in time.
Let me tell you what goes on in an NFL locker room. When Bounty Gate came down, a bunch of NFL guys and NFL analysts were like, oh, I can't believe they did that. Baloney. Every single one of us was involved in bounties. I don't care what you say. Guilty as
guilty.
Charged.
Guilty.
Guilty. Every single one of us. But you know what?
Hey,
you know what we did? We crucified the New Orleans Saints.
Yeah.
Like I said, no way, man. I was there. I did it. I mean, I played for one of the most regal men in the world in Joe Gibbs, and it was like an episode of Oprah every Monday morning after a game. You get a TV, you get a TV, you get a TV, you get a TV, you get 500, you get a grand, you get 100. That's the way it worked. We all did it. Mm. We look at this and say, no, that's the New England Patriots. That's who they are. I haven't lost any respect. I know who they are.
Mm. Yeah, I'll throw this one out at you, Whit. I know you look at the Twitterverse and you're like, you know what? Like, it's a place where everybody tries, the Twitterverse, you know, and people try to be so, people try to be so politically correct based off of what takes place on Twitter. Yeah. You know, nobody wants to put themselves out there and deal with how politically correct the world has become, because it's so, so quick for people to jump on it and judge it and tear it apart. And that's just one of those things that the New England Patriots, they don't pay attention to. They don't respect it. They don't subscribe to it. They're going to do it the way that they want to do it. They've gotten the results that they've wanted to get. And quite frankly, the reputation has basically dictated that they don't have to justify things that other NFL franchises have to justify. And that's the reason why they have so much leeway to make some of the decisions that they make. If a franchise like you look at what's going on with the Browns right now, right? They have to always try to justify, why is Odell wearing the watch? Why is this guy brought in? Why didn't you win? All these different things that the Cleveland Browns have to justify and the players have to try to justify. You don't have to do that in New England.
Let me ask you this. Let me ask you this. Yep. You brought up Twitterverse.
Sure, Twitterverse.
This question wasn't directed at Twitter.
Okay.
It was directed at you.
Uh-huh.
Have you lost any respect for the Patriot way?
For the same exact reason of what I just gave. I don't lose respect. I didn't lose respect for them making this decision because based off of, and you know, yesterday you posed a question with the Tony Dungy part of it was, you know, did you lose respect or feel a certain type of way because that sends the wrong message? You know, the interesting thing about as a coach, I started thinking about, you know what, it's up to me as a coach to my players to be that example and show them what the difference between reality and perception truly is. So it's not for Bill Belichick or the New England Patriots or for Antonio Brown to dictate that for my players or for my kids in my home. So when I look at it from a grand perspective of, do I lose respect for the New England Patriots for making this decision? It's absolutely not, because the reality of it is that they're doing what they feel is best for them to do. And if in doing that, the track record of what it is that they've been able to get done by making those decisions has yielded such positive results, then again, I think they're judged and weighed differently than everyone else.
So what I think eventually will happen when this dynasty's over, there'll be documentaries done, there'll be 30 for 30s. And I'm just sorry. This will be a part of the narrative. And it does make me look, and again, I have really high respect for the New England Patriots and the top people involved, from Kraft to Belichick to Brady. I have a ton of respect for them. That's why I lose a little bit of respect for them, because I do think Aaron Hernandez will be part of the narrative. I do think when you don't need Antonio Brown, and you still get greedy and go out there and get him and attach him to the strongest brand in football. And just for me, someone who adores football, defends football, I want my premier franchise to at least put on a bit of a perception that they're not as cutthroat, that there is some ethics driving their decision. And I think the Patriots, to some degree, are undercutting that with this and other decisions they've made and the Spygate and all the other things. It's all part of just a narrative like, man, these guys, they won, but boy, they did it any way possible. There was no ethics under guiding all of their decision making. And it does make me lose some respect for
it. Here would be my argument to the ethics aspect of it. And I understand that there's no right way to do anything wrong, right? Yeah. So just because everybody in the NFL is cheating, you know, I mean, the spotlight is on the Patriots, okay? And they've been the ones that have been scrutinized more than anybody else. But I'm here to tell you, every team tries to get any advantage they can get, and they go to great lengths to do that. But here's from an ethics standpoint in general. This is what I respect. Either toe the company line or we'll see you around sometime. They will not hesitate. I don't care if they dump $9 million on this guy. If he doesn't do what they tell him he's going to do when he is supposed to do it, he won't be there. And that part about them, it is non-negotiable.
Mark, I used to believe that. I believe it less now. And again, everybody here. And dude, this isn't a cheap shot.
Bench their starting cornerback.
This isn't a cheap shot. This isn't a cheap shot. I don't mean this is a cheap shot.
Okay.
But Penn State used to have this pristine perception. And, oh, my God, Joe Paterno, he was above everybody. And they did it the right way. And then all of a sudden,
I'm glad
there was
you
a crack
brought that
in the
up.
Dam and was like, oh, no.
I'm glad you brought that up because in my mind, I was thinking the same exact thing. And here's my response to that. The rebuttal would be the sensible thought of that is we all have families, right? Mm. We all have families. And within that family, you have family members in the sense where it could be, you know, that person is a good person. The family name has a good name, but there's always going to be that one or two family members that brings reproach on your family, right? Mm. Doesn't make your family a bad family. Penn State isn't a bad school or they have their flaws. New England may have their flaws in some of the people that they bring into their organization. I'll take that. But the reality of it is that it just plays a part of saying that, you know what, maybe they're not perfect. And having perfection, part of having perfection is being imperfect, is what I would say.
Jeff Fisher's back with us. Time now for Darnell's question of the day. Darnell.
Yep, let's move on to Baltimore, where we'll see a couple of young, exciting QBs face off on Sunday. Mm-hmm. Lamar Jackson and the Ravens hosting Kyler Murray and the Cardinals. Cliff Kingsbury, he sees a lot of similarities between the two players and says the two dynamic playmakers could be the future of the game. I want to ask you guys, who would you bet on to be the future of the game, Kyler or Lamar?
I'm gonna pass the grenade here. I'm gonna think about this one for a beat.
Oh, man, look, this is nearly a split decision, but I'm going to lean Lamar Jackson for a couple of reasons. One, he has a little looser screw, and I mean that in a positive way. Kyler Murray is very buttoned up. If you've ever been around him, you can hear even his coach, Kingsbury, talk about it. It's kind of hard to get past that first layer at times, meaning you're not as relatable, meaning we can only judge you as even a teammate on production because we're really not getting much of the personality. I saw Lamar Jackson out there balling, dancing with Hollywood, going all the way up and down the line, the scrimmage, talking to guys. More relatable beyond production. And then you talk about who's been through the grinder already. And Lamar Jackson has been through the grinder in terms of questioning his abilities. What Kyler went through was just some warped criticism of, you got to pick between baseball and football, and we turned that into a negative when that was really a miracle. So I just think that Lamar's been through a little more, and because he's more relatable to the masses on that roster, I have to lean his way.
Switch jerseys. You got two of the same guys.
Yeah.
Really, really dynamic players, like Coach says. But if you're gonna have to choose right now, you gotta go with Lamar. I mean, he won how many games in a row? 8 out of 9 or 7 out of 8 last year, and went to playoffs, you know, and did that stuff. And we've seen one game out of Tyler, so yeah. I mean, you got to
really
go with
one
Lamar.
Quarter.
Yeah, one quarter, and he didn't have a preseason, and yeah. You know, and he's got a lot. I don't want to say this because I respect for the organization in Arizona, but I think we'd all agree that Baltimore has better talent around Lamar than Arizona, with the exception of Fitz, has around Tyler. Yeah. So there you have
coaches
it. Right
staff,
now,
certainly.
Yeah.
Well, I think Lamar is in a better organization.
Yes.
We just saw an organization give up on a coach they picked and a quarterback they pitched after 1 year. So Kyler's in an unstable organization, particularly in comparison to Baltimore. I'm going to argue the other side. Mm. I have an extreme bias against quarterbacks under 6'1". I've been on the record about that. I don't like short quarterbacks.
So 6'3".
I don't like short quarterbacks. Again, okay. Drew Brees. I call him the dirty little secret.
Russell Wilson.
I don't like short quarterbacks. Now, again, they're great. I'm not taking away from their greatness, but have a bias. Having said that, one of these guys has been groomed to be a great quarterback since birth. Hmm. By his dad, who was a great college quarterback. Mm. Kyler Murray has been raised from birth to be exactly where he is today. Number one pick in the draft, leading the NFL team. I don't like his height, but I do like his heritage, his upbringing, all those other intangibles. His quirky personality kind of scares me. The fact that he's not relatable and not that great of a communicator, that scares me. But he's the number one overall pick for a reason. He won a Heisman Trophy at his size. What's to say, he's, and again, Lamar won a Heisman Trophy as well.
Yeah.
But Lamar wasn't the number one overall pick. Lamar isn't a natural thrower of the football, in my opinion. When I look at his release and all that, it still just seems odd to me, and it doesn't seem like what's that release going to look like when he's under more pressure than Miami put him under. Kyler Murray is a quarterback. Whether I like his height or not, he's been one from day one.
I have to push back on the whole bloodline conversation. I'm looking at the quarterback position, the greatest in terms of accolade. I mean, Peyton Manning is my favorite quarterback, but most would say Tom Brady. And I don't know his pedigree in terms of raising, but I know he came into the league and he was on thin ice in terms of ability and opportunity, and he made the most of it to become the greatest of all time at that position. What I like Lamar Jackson. I never questioned his throwing ability. I've said this 1,000 times. Here's 1,001. The guys just needed to be comfortable at the NFL level when the game slows down, as it has, or at least it seemed, at least in week one, versus he doesn't have the ability and he can't play in that position. This is a guy who's so dynamic. They both, when they're running the ball, and I love the whole 2.0 of both of these guys, and I'm glad Kingsbury is really highlighting these guys who have more than just arm talent. They actually can extend plays. They actually can turn into a running back for you in certain situations when plays break down. But Lamar Jackson, the question marks against him, Warren Sharp always talks about it. Everyone is talking about it. He's the best passer we've ever seen in NFL history at the age of 21. Ever. And we're still...
By number.
By what else is that?
By number.
Numbers are just a statistical record of what your performance was.
Well, if you I can't judge anything else. If you throw John Elway into this modern NFL...
It's a translation, but I hear you. I hear you.
I just don't like the way the ball comes out of Lamar's hand. It's not... I haven't seen that before.
There's been passers that have thrown the same ball and been accurate. I mean, I think you have to do this. First off, I shouldn't say this, but both of them run fast enough not to catch mono, right? Okay. So they're gonna make plays.
Man,
I'm concerned about. I would be concerned, big picture, about durability because of the just what they're subjecting themselves to.
Good point.
But
good point.
I am really impressed. Keep in mind, Lamar's got a new offensive coordinator this year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and so he's been through that and this change, and to put the numbers up he did week one, let's be patient and see what happens. It's going to be fun to watch, really fun to watch. And, you know, I'm really rooting for both of them.
Now, you know that Adam Gase's head just sunk lower after you cracked that mono.
I don't know if it can get any lower.
It can't get lower, brother. He laying down.
Take a deep
breath. He's laying down.
Is he?
Lord.
Joined again by Mark Slareth and LeVar Arrington. All right, let's revisit one of my favorite subjects, Cam Newton. Newton's Panthers host the Tampa Bay Buccaneers tonight on Thursday Night Football. It's a critical game in my relationship with Cam Newton. I've been a hardcore fan of Newton since his final season at Auburn. He won the Heisman Trophy and led the Tigers to the national championship.
It looked good back then.
While being dogged by a handful of overzealous reporters, upset that he allegedly sought the kind of financial rewards normally reserved for college coaches and administrators. Cam was my kind of quarterback. He reminded me of my favorite NFL player, John Elway. Cam was as dangerous as a runner as a passer. I thought Cam would make a run at being the GOAT. He was football's Tiger Woods. Funny I mentioned Tiger Woods. I have an unhealthy obsession with Tiger and Tiger's pursuit of Jack Nicklaus's record of 18 major championships. When Tiger plays poorly, it ruins my entire weekend. Had a lot of ruined weekends over the past 5 years as injuries have undermined Tiger's performance. Things got so bad early this year that I gave up. I publicly announced I was done expecting Tiger to ever compete for another major title. I made the announcement the day before the start of the Masters. Maybe we should let that dream go and just enjoy the time we have left with Tiger playing at a high level. The key to that is changing our expectations. I just want Tiger to make the cut on Friday. I just want to see him play for 4 days. By setting low expectations, we have a much better chance of Tiger exceeding them and making us happy. Of course, Tiger won this year's Masters. And so with that in mind, I'm lowering my expectations for Cam Newton. He's never going to be Superman again.
Whoa.
He's never going to be the MVP Cam again.
Whoa.
He's done running the football. He's done being a long ball thrower. He's never fully committed to the proper footwork and mechanics that would make him a more consistent passer. What's worse than all of that is the fact that Cam is a socially awkward goofball, sort of like Tiger Woods.
Whoa.
It's the curse of having all that talent and all that attention. It makes you goofy. Cam shows up to games and post-game news conferences dressed like someone who idolized Michael Jackson, Dennis Rodman, and Steve Harvey equally. My favorite player can't dress like Mary Poppins on game day. Sue me. Cam's a hot mess. Tonight is my last night wasting emotional energy on him. At a time when NFL quarterbacks are playing at a high level at age 40 and beyond, Cam's best days are well behind him at age 30. All right, guys. Marcellus, get us started.
You know damn well how this is about to go. Hurry up and tee me up. So
Cam, no longer be an elite quarterback?
Oh, God. You are so wrong, man. You were wrong about Tiger, wrong about Cam. Let's just be real about it. Cam can become an MVP going forward, but it's going to look a lot different than it did in 2015. Let's just all come to that understanding. This guy last year, before injury, 6-2, MVP candidate, I remember you doing a Whitlog, like, Cam Newton is tearing the league up, right? Remember that? Had a career high in completion percentage last year. Oh, but now his best days are behind him. I disagree with that. So let's talk about what elite is, what Cam Newton is. Top 10 quarterback, right?
Top 10.
Is top 10, right? Exhibit A. Tell me if Cam Newton is not a top 10 quarterback. Let's go with the consensus top 7 that we all know, right?
Well.
Patrick Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees, Tom Brady, Russell Wilson, Ben Roethlisberger, Phillip Rivers. We all agree? Yes. Those are top 10 quarterbacks, definitely my top 7. Agree? Now, I want y'all to do me a favor and put 3 dudes under that list that's going to be better than Cam Newton. And don't worry, I'll wait.
Dak Prescott.
Wait. Stop it. I'm waiting. Save Whitlock, y'all. Anybody. Somebody.
Matt Ryan.
Everybody scream.
Carson Wentz.
Matt Ryan.
Carson Wentz.
Matt Ryan.
Never won a playoff game. Matt Ryan. I can give you. Look,
Jared Goff.
Derek Carr.
Are we being for real up here? Cam Newton or Derek Carr?
I'm taking Cam Newton.
I don't think that's an easy. I don't think that's an easy answer.
Who? Y'all got 3? 3.
What?
I'm not talking about up and coming and could be. I'm talking about accomplished and have done
Nobody's been the MVP.
Exactly.
But guys that are playing as well or better than Cam right now, you can come up with 3. Here's what I would tell you. First off, MVP stands for what?
Most valuable player.
Most valuable player, not most valuable quarterback. See, you're on the wrong impression or the wrong premise. He's never been an elite quarterback. He's been an elite player.
There's a big difference there.
In 2015, he was an elite quarterback.
Was he? He completed 59% of his passes. That's an elite quarterback? No, it's not. He was never an elite thrower of the ball. What you've seen here is you've seen a transition because Cam Newton knows that Cam Newton can't play like Superman and survive. His body has broken down. What he did last year was the most impressive thing that I've seen him do since he came into this career, was to say, hey, I'm going to be honest with myself. I can no longer put myself in harm's way. What I'm going to do is learn how to be a quarterback. And he did it exceptionally well for 8 games last year until his shoulder just quit on him. So what I'm telling you is he can play and he can develop into an elite level quarterback, but he's never going to be the elite level, like, he's not going to put himself into harm's way to be the elite level player or the MVP player, which I think is better. Well, I think what he's doing right now is way better.
35
and I'd love to see it.
And 10 interceptions is not elite.
I said he was not an elite thrower of the ball. When you have what he had and the way he played, absolutely, he was an MVP.
Before LeVar goes, I'm just going to say this.
Yeah, okay,
I don't like you disrespecting him as a quarterback in 2015. Because, again, you think quarterback is just throwing the ball. No, the definition of quarterback is the guy who takes the hike from center. That's it. And Cam took the hike from center, and he ran the football. That's part of quarterbacking. Yeah, and he threw the football. Yeah. And in 2015, he was the best at quarterback.
I agree. I was going to push back, and that was actually going to be one of my points. And I'm going to push back on Wiley as well on disagreeing with the Tiger Woods assessment in comparison with Cam. I think it's spot on, and I think it's very accurate. You look at the fact that he had a rough go at it against a 19th overall defense overall 14th versus the pass and the Rams. Now, the Rams are the runner-ups in the Super Bowl, but it was nonetheless, it was a tough outing for him. So when I look at the comparison and saying, okay, let's lower our expectations, that doesn't mean that he can't be that. It doesn't mean that Tiger Woods couldn't transition into winning that championship like he did. But the reality of it is that you at one point expected Tiger to always win. At some point, you expected to see Cam Newton do some of the things that were just super, super out of the norm for somebody at his position. Is he at that age now, physically, where he can do the things that he once did in that season that we're talking about? I don't think he is. And so if he's able to transition to a higher level, ascend to a higher level than what he did in 15, I think the verdict is out on that. And I think that it's hard to justify, especially when you're in such a difficult, arguably the hardest division in all of the NFL. So I'm going to lower my expectations of it.
And I'm going to tell you the other thing that I want y'all to deal with is
deal with
I
it,
think
Whit.
Mentally, this is where the Tiger Woods, Cam Newton analogy, just mentally. Some guys just aren't built for adversity after adversity after adversity. Mm-hmm. And I think, Cam, when your career has been built on your physical gifts and someone's, we're going to take those away from you, I think that messes with your mind.
That's the thing. But you guys, I have a few points here. One, don't forget who Cam Newton is present day. A guy who was coming off a shoulder surgery and shoulder injury, and then a preseason foot injury. So he's coming off of two injuries without a lot of practice. All right, and opportunities to go out there with live bullets. Then we're going to also highlight C-Mac in this offense. McCaffrey's going to be more of the mainstay in this offense than in years prior. Then let's not act like the Rams are just scrubs. And I don't like rankings when you go into a new season because you have new personnel. So we can say 19th ranked defense. There's eight new dudes out there. So don't give me last year's rankings. You're going against a team that got that close. They're hungry. They're ready to go. And they were fresh. They didn't even play in the preseason, the guys that they count on. So I just think it's too early to discount Cam when last seen on a football field in a regular season meaningful game, he was an MVP candidate.
Let me just say this.
When
because I love the fact that you've quit on Cam, except you're still defending him. Because I can tell that you're not really quitting on Cam.
He ain't breaking up like, with
you ain't breaking
tonight
it.
Tonight is a critical night.
You are mad, but you're waiting for your phone to ring. You're waiting for that call at midnight, baby. You are angry right
those
now.
Those three bubbles. Like, yeah. Text me, girl.
I don't even want that call. Hello? Yeah, I'll be right over. So, I mean, that's what you're doing right now. Yeah. But here's the deal. Like, what Cam did in 2015 was amazing. I'm not going to take that away from him. I would never take that away from him. It was incredible. What I'm telling you is Cam has come to the realization, very much like you said, my body cannot handle that. And for me to be elite, I have to change my game. And he's embraced that, and I've had the conversation with him. Mano a mano, like you and I are sitting here.
Yep.
Okay? So that's where he is right now. And I, for one, that makes me proud. Because what's the old saying? I've seen a lot of really good young running quarterbacks. I ain't never seen a good old running quarterback. They don't survive. And he knows it.
Here's the problem. Mm. And you, Mark, I know how well researched you are. You probably went back and watched the game, but you were calling the game while I was watching Cam Newton.
Yeah.
And the problem I have, there were about three critical throws against the Rams that the play was there and Cam didn't come through. That's what separates the really good quarterbacks from the mediocre quarterbacks in the NFL. They could have won that game. Their defense played a tremendous game, kept them in that game, turned the Rams over and blocked a punt, put them back in the game, and Cam blew it. And that's what had my weekend miserable, and it's why tonight I'm just like, this is it, Cam. If you can't beat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Jameis Winston, I'm done.
Let me just, I got something for you. Yeah, okay, let me go.
Yep.
I think in here, that's why I've said I don't ever believe he's been an elite-level thrower of the football. In critical situations, I've seen too many of those plays. But I will give this to Marcellus because he's right. Coming off a shoulder and then you hurt your foot in camp. And
sounds like Tiger Woods.
Well, when your foot, let me just tell you as a quarterback, if you got a foot –
rotational force comes from the ground through the hips to the arm. That's exactly the way it works. And so when you all of a sudden, and this is endemic of the league in general when it comes to preseason, when nobody practices, you know how much sloppy garbage football we saw this weekend? Because nobody's ready to play, and that happens.
I got a better example for me. He's not Tiger Woods. He's Blake Griffin. And you got to remember, Blake Griffin hit the league by storm and started to transition, realizing my body can't do that all the time. And some people, because he's in Detroit right now, think he has fallen off. Oh, no, he hasn't. Career high in scoring, assists, and the three-point line where the game has transitioned to. He is Blake Griffin. He's going to change his game and protect himself in the process and become greater at it.
I got one better.
We
got
to go, LeVar. Oh, but again, that's like Blake Griffin was the poster child. Now he's not. He's something different and good.
Better. He's a better player, but just not
a poster. This guy was Superman. We'll see if he can be Batman. Mark Slareth and LeVar Arrington are back. Let's move to Thursday Night Football. Where Jameis Winston and the Bucs will try to bounce back tonight against the Panthers. After a sloppy week one loss to the 49ers, Jameis threw three picks in that game, including two pick sixes, and he also threw some major doubt on whether Bruce Arians would be able to revitalize the former number one pick's faltering career. All right, the question here is, does Winston have any chance to salvage his career?
Any chance to salvage his career? I'm a naysayer. I'm a doubter. I haven't seen the progress as expected from a guy who has what Jameis Winston has in terms of attributes. But I'm not going to lie to y'all. I'm going to keep it 100. I remember watching Jameis Winston in college and saying, let me just make a mark of this moment. Because I knew that this may not end well for Jameis Winston, despite all the love and attention he was getting. I went to that Rose Bowl game at the Rose Bowl when he was already a Heisman Trophy winner, won a national championship, and projected number one overall. And then I went out there and I saw this one play. And I know this play turned into something of jest and everyone was laughing, but my friend George Reister of Fox was an Oregon fan, and we were sitting next to each other, and I said, mark that moment, man. I don't know about my man right here. And I started to watch his career with a different
Lord,
that's the number one pick. I started looking at his career a whole lot differently, man. And I'm telling you, I've done this many a times, not always right. Day one when Kaepernick took a knee, I looked at him like, this may not end up well, but I ain't gonna hate on my man until it turned into silence and settlement. I knew in this moment, Jameis Winston, this may not end up well, and I think we are there right now. With everything on the line, in week one, playing San Fran, you go out there and throw three picks. Now your coach has to absolve you of two of those picks just to save your confidence, and you're the number one overall pick. I'm not piling on Jameis because he knows I like him, but in terms of what he's done, I haven't seen the trajectory go where it should have.
Let me quote the great Lloyd Christmas. One in a million? So you're telling me there's a chance? I read ya. I think this is almost, and I love my man B.A., Bruce Arians, who's coaching them. I think this is almost a relationship that's just bound to go awry because Bruce Arians, one of his main mantras is no risk it, no biscuit. Yeah. Let's go deep, baby. Yeah. And I've never seen a guy who's more willing to throw it into a team meeting than Jameis Winston. Man, he what, four DBs over there? Yeah, I can fit this in. There's no problem. Like, he'll throw it into a doggone defensive team meeting on a day-to-day basis. So how is that, like, how does that work? I'm just saying, if you get to your fifth-year option as a quarterback, especially a number one overall quarterback, and they haven't come to you and said, let's get this thing done, there's a reason. And I just don't think it's going to be here in Tampa Bay. I think they're going to be looking for a new one, new quarterback.
We've seen what Jameis has had to offer. I mean, it's done in terms of what his ceiling is. He hit that ceiling. I mean, whether people want to accept that or not, he's hit his ceiling.
And 25.
He's hit his ceiling in terms of what he's able to accomplish. I mean, if you're looking at it from a critical age, well, you know what? Some people hit their ceilings at younger ages. Some people mature earlier, stop growing.
Yeah, we all play with that 12-year-old who couldn't be tackled. tackled at 12, right? Sure. Had a full beard and everything. Yep. He didn't make the high school
Everyone
team.
Caught up to
Rich Gannon wasn't Rich Gannon until like age 35.
Don't and use that's my, fair. There, that's
there's,
my guy.
There's always the exceptions. Machine. There's always exceptions to the rule, but I think we've looked at Jameis and we've seen what his capabilities are at this point. You look at him, and we keep referencing Florida State because those were his best days. Those were the best days of seeing what Jameis Winston had to offer. And I think the reality of it is when you have the type of athletes that were playing on that Florida State team at that time in the college ranks, it's not as difficult to be successful as it is in
some
having
franchises
to read.
Just aren't quarterback friendly.
And Tampa Bay happens to be one of them. Tampa Bay happens since Brad Johnson, right?
Since Doug Williams.
Well, can I
they won the Super Bowl with Brad Johnson, so.
Yeah, but he wasn't any good.
Well, let me be real. I mean, because we're covering the Super Bowl Foxes this year. I'm going to see Jameis at some of these Super Bowl parties because they certainly ain't going to be in it, right? So I want to make sure he knows that I got his back in some respects. He's only second to Dan Marino in touchdowns thrown by the age of 25. More than Peyton Manning, Drew Bledsoe, Matthew Stafford by that same age, to Whitlock's point. And I played against a machine known as late bloomer Rich Gannon. And it can change. But, boy, you're in the 0.00001% now if you're talking about he's going to change things.
All right, Darnell, did we miss anything?
Yes, sir. Speaking of the Bucks and Panthers, hope you guys are excited for the new free-to-play game, Thursday Night Football, Season 6. One of the questions for tonight is, which team will win and by how many points? So, Whitlock and Marcellus, who you got?
I have the Tampa Bay Buccaneers winning in a shocking upset.
Oh, you don't.
Yes, I do.
Shocking.
They're
shocking.
They're getting 6.5 points. I got them winning 24-21. Close game. Good game.
I think this was going to go as advertised, and Tampa Bay is going to lose this game, and that won't be a shock. 27-11. Yeah.
27-11.
Yeah, they're going to get a field goal and have to go for two. Just try to keep it close. We got double digits, coach.
Oh, man. All
right, that's how the game's going to play out.
Yeah, so before the game kicks off tonight, download the Fox Sports Super 6 app and play Thursday Night Football Super 6 for free for a chance to win $25,000 of Terry Bradshaw's money.
Uncle Jimmy's here to help us talk about Cam Newton.
You know.
Oh, my God. Who are you, Cam or The Weeknd?
Don't worry about it. Let's get to the big dummy of the day.
Go get that.
And it's with deep regret, Marcellus, you got to get this today. Hey, man, because for real, I did not realize it. Jameis Winston's career is solely on your hands. You are the only person that saw that play. You could have called that brother and gave him the heads up. Now look at his career. It's your fault.
That ain't on me. That was
ain't
a meme.
Nobody else seen that but you.
Went viral, man. That ain't on me.
Let's talk some Cam Newton.
That man ain't
who
got
was looking
no virus.
To bounce back tonight from an ugly week one loss to the Rams and an even uglier post-game outfit. Marcellus.
Yes, sir.
What are the chances Cam's outfit tonight drives me crazy?
Drives you crazy?
Yeah.
1,000% chance. Look, if it ain't from Ross or CNR, you ain't feeling it. I know how you roll. You so conservative. Gotta look presidential out there. Man, these kids ain't looking presidential. They looking fresh. And I love it, man. So you ain't with the millennial way. So I know you're gonna
be upset. I just hope. If you're out there, Cam, and you're watching, if you got nothing else to do, go to Tom Ford, get you a nice little custom suit.
Hey, here you go. Spend all that money for nothing. No.
Just leave it at that. You don't got to do all them extras.
No. Do you, Cam. It's your clothes. You wear what you want to wear.
Why you got to want to look like Uncle Jimmy? Uncle Jimmy, you got any thoughts on Cam with that crazy outfit? You got any thoughts on Cam?
I see you.
Look here, man, let me explain something to you right now. The question is whether or not Cam's outfit is going to upset you.
Yeah.
And the answer is hell to the yeah. Cam's outfit tonight gonna make you cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs.
Look at them legs.
Hey, man, look, it's like one of my daddies used to tell me. He used to say, boy, your hair's nappy and your nose is snotty. If you don't know something about fashion, you need to go ask somebody. See here, right now, I know you knows nothing about this. So I'm gonna give you a pass. You know why? Because I know it's hard for you to know something about this when you've been shopping at the Al Roker collection in the Husky department for the last 20 years.
Al Roker.
You know, I know what it's like to try. I know it's hard for you to find you some 5828 Versace skinny leg jeans. You know, I'm gonna defend Cam and his sense of fashion mobility, but I'm not gonna defend his play. You know, I told y'all before, Cam is a victim of the fight or flight theory.
The fight or flight.
Yeah, so now he's trying to act like he can fight, But he know damn well he ain't gonna bust a grape in a fruit fight. You know what I'm saying? He's not about that life.
Stop.
You know, my grandmama used to tell me, hey, boy, a good run beat a bad stand any day. Tonight, if it get tight, take flight. Get your couple runs and,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Oh, I so you want it, yeah. Cam to go back to the running
yeah,
game.
Yeah, yeah, Superman. Flight, huh? Take off.
You, huh?
You yeah, want look Superman.
At, I, mm-hmm, look at, say whatever you want to say about Cam.
I see you, homie.
You know, at least he can run. I like him better than I like that damn, what's his name? Jameis Winston. The boy is 6'4". 227 and run a 5.940. The only black quarterback in the NFL that can get outrun by Peyton Manning. Or his brother Eli Manning.
Wow.
Hey, and as the young people say, Uncle Jimmy dead ass serious. What the hell wrong with the boy? Huh? The boy got issues. The boy got an identity problem. That's how his ass got in trouble with them crab legs. The boy went in there, look, I have from a reliable source. It was a nice, fresh pile of chicken nuggets right there. No, this uppity ass wanna go in, oh, let me get some of them crab legs. That's just like your people.
I'm doing too
I
much.
I call the boy Jameis Stupid Winston.
Oh, man, that ain't right.
Hey, I knew it was something wrong with the boy in the pregame fight when he started chewing on his fingers. The boy chewed off his fingers on his throwing hand, Marcus. And didn't want to dap her like,
throw the W's.
I know, man.
Throw the W's.
Look here, man, let me tell you something. You always talking about your boy Colin Kaepernick got an identity crisis. Mm. Hell, at least he can run. What the hell wrong with your boy Jameis Winston?
Hell yeah, get him.
Huh? I gotta go quick bangs. Here.
Let's get him.
I move Jameis down to a 61. A role player, job performance down to a 12. Knock the other ones a few points. 61
all
role player.
All red, huh?
Yeah.
You are off the Cam wagon, boy.
That's oh, shit.
Job
yeah,
performance.
That is Cam.
Yeah, I give him a little hit on the job performance, but everything else goes up. But scout team?
The internet agrees with me, got him at scout team. You got him at an all-star?
I got him at an all-star because I know who he is, and he's going to show y'all
please
tonight.
God, where's something James presentable is tonight, Cam? Joined now by Fox College football analyst, college football analyst, Joel Clatt. Time now for Darnell's question of the day.
Say it again, but we're not.
Darnell.
A lot going on there.
Casadonis got to you, didn't he?
Anyway, man, let's talk about Nick Saban in Alabama.
Ooh.
The Tide are off to a 2-0 start after wins over Duke and New Mexico State.
Duh.
But as usual, their non-conference schedule is being criticized. Over the weekend, Saban got testy with reporters who pressed him about their soft schedule. But he's even more upset about something that happened during a blowout win over New Mexico State when the student section cleared out before the game was over. Check this out.
If I asked that whole student section, all right, do you want to be number one? Nobody would put their hand up and say, I want to be number four. They would all say, we want to be number one. But are they willing to do everything to be number one? That's another question. But that's a choice and decision they got to make. But all these things affect the program, all right, because, you know, people come and we have recruits here, and they want to see a full house and all that. I hope that there's something that we could do that would enhance their wanting to stay and have the spirit to stay and all that. But I don't really know much about all that stuff. You know, that's not my cup of tea, trying to figure out how to stop, you know, Snag 7 flat.
All right, so Joe, I want to start with you. Is Nick Saban still happy at Alabama?
Yes, he's so happy. Let me tell you why, because every coach – in America says those same things, but they're to me behind closed doors. They just don't have the name equity to do it in front of the podium. Mm. That's the thing. Everybody laments something around their program behind closed doors. And this is what Nick Saban laments at Alabama. It doesn't mean that he's unhappy. You know, just because Bill Belichick looks like he's comatose at pressers doesn't mean that he's unhappy. I think Nick Saban is very happy because he's at a place where he can be the best. You know, that's what he desires. He's not in it for the praise of the student section. He is worried probably. I tell you what probably set him off. There was probably a recruit that was like, man, I wish students would have stayed. And he's like, if we lose this recruit over the, you know, that's what gets his blood boiling. So I still think he's happy. And I want to go to something that he said within that little rant in that press conference, which was, you know, who wants to raise their hand to be number one? Everyone does. No one wants to be number four. Are they willing to do the things to be number one? It's just a kind of a throw-in little thing. But here's what I think is so interesting about it. I really believe that most people demand greatness of others without first demanding greatness of themselves. Mm-hmm. And so Nick Saban is clearly a guy that has demanded greatness of himself and his program. And he's uniquely aware of the discipline, the fortitude, the structure that it takes, the sacrifice that it takes to get to where he's at. So when he feels arrows slung his way from people or groups that he does not feel like has sacrificed the way he has to be great, I think it makes his blood boil. And that's what we're seeing right there in those press conferences.
You nailed it right there. He has to come out and say these type of things, because if he doesn't, nobody and nothing controls the expectations at Alabama. So here's the thing about the expectations. If you look at it, they need to appreciate what's going on step by step. Respect and trust this process. That means players, that means boosters, that means fans, that means students. We're all in this together. Coach used to say something like he used to say. Who wants to be a champion in this room before training camp? Everybody's hand goes up. And then he started naming the responsibility that comes with becoming a champion. He was like, I know some of y'all should put your hands down, right? And you're right. Here's the cliche that I used to always hear in exact terms about this situation. Everybody wants to go to the parade, but nobody wants to build the damn floats. And that's exactly what this is.
That's great.
They just want to show up on Macy Day. Hey, this is beautiful. You got to show up all the time, bro.
Well, I agree with everything you all have said. I'm just going to defend the kids a little bit.
What, traffic?
Not traffic. It's like,
the beer is closing.
Not traffic. It's just like, hey, man. When George is here, when Mizzou's here, when we're here.
Yeah.
You keep putting this mediocre entertainment in front of us, and we got better things to do.
That's an interesting part of this.
Yeah.
And it's hard. I don't know where I come down on that, because it's not Alabama's responsibility to schedule in order to sell tickets. Their responsibility is to win championships, and they schedule to win championships, and they do it better than anybody else in college football. Having said that, he also had a rant about, we're trying to play the best people that we can play. I'll play anybody, anywhere. Yes, to a point.
Right.
Remember, this is a team that would not do home and homes for the last however many years. They've only, since he got there, played two non-conference true road games in Saban's tenure. That's not enough. That's a decade of football, right? Now, they do have Texas coming up with a home-and-home and Wisconsin coming up with a home-and-home. But what started to happen, guys, they would call teams up and say, hey, we want to play you in the non-conference. And people would be like, okay, great. So when do you want to come up here, and when do you want us to come down to Tuscaloosa? And they're like, no. We're talking about coming to Dallas or Atlanta. Yeah. And everyone's like, no.
Yeah.
We're not going to do that, because that's really a road game for us. You know, when they bring a Pac-12 school out to Dallas, or they bring somebody else down to Atlanta, and they know that it's going to be 75% Alabama fans. So there is a responsibility that Alabama has to have, and they are mitigating that formula moving forward. Like I said, Texas with a home and home, Wisconsin with a home and home, Notre Dame with a home and home, West Virginia. They've also got, I believe it's Oklahoma on there.
I'm going to disagree with your point a little bit in terms of what the priorities are. And you're right, winning a championship, but the actual purpose of college athletics is to entertain your student body and fan base.
No, that's gone. that's been lost when the money kicked in.
That, to me, is either equal.
What are we talking about here?
Yeah, right. What are you doing? You purist?
that's been gone. That's the purpose.
Oh, stop.
Educate these athletes, entertain the student body.
Old and dusty with that.
The boosters and all that. It's an entertainment event.
Oh, really?
It's really a Michael Jackson concert, and if Michael doesn't perform songs off a Thriller,
it's a problem.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, if he does everything off the wall, it's like, hey, man.
No, that's good,
we
too.
We came here to
just
see Thriller.
Just don't do all the bad. That's the we start losing. Yeah,
let's be honest. If it was just about educating the athlete.
Nah, I'm not saying just about.
But you did incorporate that.
Yeah, you did include that, right?
Yeah. I'm not. Yeah. Okay, so you did include that. Then we wouldn't lower standards to get athletes in based on the rest of the student population.
Uh-oh.
Right?
Academic index.
Oh, right. Good. Right.
You know, don't stop, like, Joe. Uh-oh. I wouldn't have went to college.
if not for some lower.
I probably wouldn't have either. I'm not saying anything right. that I'm not including in myself.
Three amigos up here.
The four amigos.
Yeah. But what I will say is the shame of that fact is, the truth is, that we're allowing kids into school to benefit football and basketball programs, and those kids are ill-equipped to actually attend the university that they're at. And so what ends up happening is, via paper classes, looking at you, North Carolina, or what, they just kind of get these kids through eligibility-wise, and they're not really actually trying to get them the degree that they've marketed it as.
Well, can we?
We got very little time.
Damn, I know. Man. I'm sorry. I brought something.
You
I just threw.
We got meat on that bone.
I just threw a grenade out there. You got, do you know what I'm saying, though?
Yeah, I think we're overthinking this. When you play smaller programs like that, you got to pay for it, right? Like Alabama's paying for this, and they're like, "You suckers can't even stay through the whole thing."